Thank you. My name's Leo Harney. I'm an alcoholic. I live in Salt Lake, and my phone number's 268-2871. It's on the women's bathroom wall, if you didn't get that. Keith put it there. If you're here from the press, you're probably in trouble with your boss, but I'm Leo H. for your benefit. I'm really grateful to the committee for asking me to speak here this morning. I still don't get it. You know, we've got a trustee and a member of the board of Alcoholics Anonymous and me as speakers this weekend, and I can't figure that out. I'm wondering who they asked that said no. and a spiritual meeting at that. You know, I've taken some heat for that. Gene Duffy was one of my heroes. He was a circuit speaker, and God rest his soul, he died last year. But we had him about 10 years ago speak at a camp out down in Maple Grove at a spiritual meeting. And he said having him speak at a spiritual meeting was like having a nun explain to a bunch of hookers about premarital sex. And that's kind of how I feel this morning. Spirituality. I'll talk about nuns. They've terrorized me through most of my life. I'm not a speaker, a circuit speaker, or anything. I want to say to the committee, what a good job you've done. Anyone who hasn't served on one of these committees doesn't know how much work's involved. And you know, like if you get through it to this point, Julie is. She's made a lot of enemies this weekend, including Keith, and you know, it's really tough. But we all have to get our name on the line if we're going to be sober, responsible members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yesterday was really a big day, and I want to congratulate everyone who stood up to get counted, and not only those who won, but those who didn't. It takes a lot of guts to put your name on the blackboard, because we're really sensitive, afraid people inside, and that sense of rejection. That's not why I didn't stand, incidentally. I thought it's time for me to step back in the spirit of rotation and let some of you young bucks take over. That's pretty much what happened, but the last job they filled yesterday, my young buck wife stood up, and so now I get to go to Vernal and Richfield and all and go through craft shops and crap like that while she sits in the meetings. See me and Pat Harris and Ernie in a craft shop doing doilies and... God's not only in charge, but he's got a great sense of humor, you know. My story, I was born over in Colorado, and when I was just a little teeny kid, 3 or 4, we moved to Pueblo, Colorado. It's a pretty good-sized town, and my parents, I know now, were alcoholics. I didn't know that then. And when I was 4, my mother just disappeared. And my dad couldn't take care of us. They had raised 2 kids, a girl and a boy, and there were 3 of us left. And me and my one brother, who's a year older than me, got put to live with these Italians that my sister had married into their family. And I wondered if I'd have been a better kid if I wouldn't have got thrown away. And my dad didn't like us living with these Italians, so he had us put in this Catholic orphanage over there. They don't have orphanages anymore, but they did then. The state and the federal didn't have all the control they have now. The nuns took care of the kids. But here I had 2 parents, and I'm in an orphanage run by nuns. And I don't know if there are any recovering Catholics in here, but that's harder to recover from than alcoholism, man, I tell you. And that ain't got nothing to do with spirituality either. It has to do with fear and religion. But anyhow, we lived there a long time, and I just kept thinking, I wonder what we did wrong, me and my brother, that we got thrown away. And then all of a sudden, the World War II ends. I got my oldest brother takes me, and my sister in Oregon took my other brother, and so I just thought the nuns threw us away. And then my mother surfaces in Salt Lake City, married to another drunk, and she sends for us. So I come to live in Utah with this woman I didn't know, who was my mother, and this guy. And, you know, I hear dysfunctional families. I guess that's a dysfunctional family. I don't know. But when I got here, I had no social skills. I was a teenager. We had been isolated from the girls, and I didn't know how you talk to girls or really what even they were. I just knew I was starting to like to look at them. And I was getting those urges we get in puberty, and you know, the nuns had said, if you ever touch that thing, you're going to hell, and I had to touch it, you know, rub against a wall and act like it was an accident, you know, and hope God wouldn't know what you were doing. Not really. But I got running with a gang in Salt Lake that they knew their way around, and they'd pay these guys to get them booze. And I found the magic of alcohol pretty young. I don't know, 14, 15, I don't know what I was. But man, that stuff was magic. It felt good when it went down. You know, it just warmed me up. And after about three drinks, God, I got tough. Just automatically, I was strong. I was brave. I was tall. I was good looking. And I could talk to girls. And I wanted to talk to them girls bad. I wanted to do a lot with them girls, but I just couldn't do it sober. I still don't think I can sober, but it's another story. I haven't had to over the years. The booze got me in a lot of trouble. When I was 17, a judge in Salt Lake sent me to the Marine Corps. In them days, they'd send you in the service or to Ogden to the industrial school they had then. And he sent me into Marine Corps. And I got some bad information in boot camp. I mean, they shave your head all bald. And I was bad. I was off the streets of Salt Lake, man. I was bad. In them days, bad was if you broke a window or shoplifted. You know, now it's if you kill your gang member or whatever. But they shave you bald and give you these great big clothes and call you names and throw you around and shit in boot camp. And I didn't know what I had done to myself. And they degrade you. They get you right down to nothing. And then they build you into what they want. It's brainwashing. But that's what the Marine Corps does, and it works. In 4 months, they had me convinced that I was the biggest, meanest, toughest son of a bitch that ever came down the road. And they gave me 4 months' pay, I don't know what it was, and weekend liberty, and said I had to kick the shit out of a couple sailors while I was on liberty that weekend to show I could do it. And I went out there and tried it, and they almost killed me. And I got some bad information. And then, you know, as any good alcoholic, I figured out what I'd done wrong, and the next weekend tried it again with the same results. And I know now that that's what us alcoholics do. We keep repeating the same thing over and over, expecting different results, and they don't ever happen. Anyhow, I had a good career in the Marine Corps, and got married while I was in the Marine Corps, and I didn't knock her up. I don't know why I married her. I didn't have to. And they sent me to Korea, and I didn't miss her. So I don't know if that was true love or not. I stayed married to her for 24 years, but I'm not sure now why. I still get a cringe in my belly when I see that woman. And she calls my wife, hun. She likes that. I did geographicals when I got out of the Marine Corps. I moved to Oregon, then back to Salt Lake, and then to Vegas, and then to Salt Lake, and then to Vegas, and then to Salt Lake, because it would be better there, you know. And everywhere I went, I took Leo and his bottle of whiskey with him. And it wasn't better there. And I got to where we all do, where you start wrecking cars and getting in jail and all those things. I tried religion. That didn't work. I went to a school on alcoholism in Salt Lake. They call it the University of Utah Alcohol Rehab Clinic or something. I went there for years, and that didn't work. I started making money and going to the shrinks and give them $100 an hour and lie to them, and then tell them, and then go home and say, shrinks are stupid. They don't help you at all. Well, how are they going to help you if you lie to them? But I did that for a lot of years, and the years went by, and I wasn't growing emotionally or spiritually or anything else, but I didn't know it. My kids were growing up, but one thing I always did was make some money. I thought my job was to make money, and her job was to take care of them kids in the house. And do you know that I know now I never once held one of my kids in my lap and read to them. I didn't go kiss them goodnight. I didn't do all the things that we do because I didn't know that's what you were supposed to do. I thought my job was to love them or to feed them and give them a house to live in. And I had a chaotic life. I mean, I can remember like it was yesterday, and I haven't been in jail since 1971. Waking up in jail, coming to in jail, and not knowing why you're in there. That's a terrible fear, you know? It's hard to be cool when your nose is running in front of... And I know you all think I'm cool. I'm not going to try to stay in this drunk log. I heard a Californian say to me once, in Utah they don't tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. They tell what it was like, and what it was like. And we do that, you know, give you 55 minutes of the disease and 5 minutes of the recovery. I don't know where I just was. I'm going to, I was in jail, wasn't I? Well, naturally, I want to forget that. She used to come and get me out. And one day she said, I'm not going to come get you out. And she told the kids, they were all teenagers, he's in jail, go get him if you want. And they let you out, and you go up this ramp there in Salt Lake when you get out of jail. And there I was, my three kids come to get the old man out of jail. That's a little degrading, especially when you've got them convinced you're this big whatever I had them convinced I was. I wound up, some of these guys I had, I'm going to AA now. I'm going to tell you how I got there and what happened that morning. A couple of these guys I'd been to the university clinic with had started going to AA without my knowledge, and I was in trouble at home again. And they said, let's go down to this, club in Murray and go to an AA meeting. And I said, I'm going to no AA meeting, I'm not that bad. But it'll get you away from her for an hour and, have some coffee. So we went to this Alno Club in Salt Lake, and I know most of you have been there, but those of you who haven't, it's an old church building in Murray. The Mormons abandoned like 300 years ago in this low-life section of Murray. I mean, it's not where you go show your visitors to Utah. And so naturally, the alcoholics bought it. That's perfect for us. And it looks pretty good now, but then they didn't have this finished ceiling in the basement. It was all pipes and shit all running through there, and it needed paint, and it's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. And so we go upstairs, and we go in this room and sit down, and I'm in between these two guys. Now, I don't want anyone in this room to forget I was a Marine for a lot of years. U.S. Marine Corps. I got a tattoo. I sat between these two guys and didn't know what to expect, and looked around the room, and pretty much who I'm looking at now, And I thought, Jesus Christ, they belong here, you know, but I don't. I was a successful realtor, man. I was making $100,000 a year. And somebody got up and read a portion of the fifth chapter. And do you know that all the way through that, they mentioned God? And I thought, this is a goddamn bunch of religious freaks. These guys have brought me here to be. And man, people would get up when they were called on and lie. I've been sober 6 months. I've been sober 3 years. And I'm thinking, I don't get this. I don't know. Maybe they have to say that so they'll feed them after this meeting or something, you know. And then, do you know what they did at the end of that meeting? They stood up and held hands and prayed. And I had a guy on either side of me. And Marines don't hold hands with guys. And I was a bigot and a racist and a lot of things that I hope I can cover. I'm no speaker. I don't know what I'll talk about. Pissed me off what it did. And I think God would accept that term, pissed me off. And we went outside and I said, I don't know if you guys have turned into faggots or what the hell's happened to you. Because I thought they'd taken me to a bunch of Jesus freak queers. And I said, you know, what you've done with your lives is your business, but I really resent you taking me there. And, you know, they're saying, oh, come on, Leo, you're all right. They're not, that's just their ritual, you know, they're praying and stuff, and they're not queer or nothing. And I went home, and the magic of that meeting was she wasn't mad at me. She's always mad at me, and she wasn't mad at me. I'd gone to an AA meeting, and she wasn't mad at me all day. I watched a doubleheader on TV, football. She wasn't even mad. And I thought, well, hell, you know, that's pretty good. I didn't stop drinking, but I kept going there every Sunday, and she wouldn't be mad at me every Sunday. And, you know, and I got used to, well, for about the first 6 months, I'd be sure I was sitting between girls. You know, it took some doing. But one day she said to me, how come you keep going to AA? And you don't get sober. You keep drinking. And I showed her the big book. I said, look at that, how thick it is. You've got to memorize that before it takes. I swear to God I did that, and I swear to God she believed me. And she was and still is an untreated Al-Anon. The real miracle for me, I know now, but I didn't know then, was that you tolerated me. You tolerated me. I'd stand up every meeting in a nuke. I'm Leo. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Leo, you know, and I'd sit down, and you never made me feel humiliated or anything. And then when I started getting more than 30 days, I liked that attention. I needed attention and acceptance. A lot of times I had more than 30 days, and I'd stand up and say that, so you clap for me and say, hi, Leo. Now, I know that sounds pretty sick, but I didn't come here because I was well. And you did tolerate me, and some of you did chew my ass out and try to tell me, you know, hey, you keep coming in here and taking up a chair, you better take action. And I said, I am taking action. I've never come to an AA meeting drunk yet. But I was in and out of this program and in and out of this program. And I don't know about your kids as teenagers. Mine got struck stupid at about 15. About the same age I got struck stupid, but it's different when it's your kids. And they did some shit. And their mother just saying, well, they're just growing up. And she didn't know how complicated and serious this was. And I had a really successful real estate business. My oldest girl was my secretary. My son was a high school jock. My youngest girl was a good student. And within a 2-year period, he just dated one girl all the way through school. One day he told me she was pregnant, and I thought, that's fine, you know. We'll get you married, and we planned this big church wedding and everything, you know, and 500 invitations and all. And he came to me the day before the wedding and says, Dad, I don't want to marry her in the morning. I said, are you out of your mind? You've knocked her up, and I've sent out all these invitations, and you're going to get married in the morning. I don't want to marry her. I want to marry Cindy. I didn't even know who Cindy was. And he said, I said, you're not marrying Cindy. You've knocked Jolene up. He said, well, Cindy's pregnant, too. That's cause for a drink if you're alcoholic. Then my oldest girl, my rock came to me and said, Dad, I'm pregnant. And I said, no, it's no big thing, you know, marry the guy and live happily ever after. And she said, I don't want to marry him. I don't love him. Why'd you get in bed with him? You know, Jesus, you know. And within, I don't know, less than a year after that, my baby girl come to me and said, Dad, I'm moving out. And I said, okay, if it's time. And she said, I'm pregnant. And I said, so, you know, what's new? And she said, he's black. And I'm going to tell you, folks, I was a racist. I didn't know it, but I found out that instant I was a racist. And I went and got me a bottle of whiskey and got out my 30-30 because I was going to kill some people. Her, that baby in her belly, and that, I called him a nigger, that nigger that knocked her up, and I would have killed him. And I know there's never been a good drunk in this room, right? Well, I had a good drunk. It lasted 4 months, and by the time I come out of it, I was so goddamn sick, I not only couldn't kill anybody, you know, I was trying to figure out how to stay alive. And I didn't kill him. So within seconds, I had 4 grandkids, you know, and none of them looked like Leo. I had me a Greek and a black one and a couple, I don't know, Mongols, I don't know what they are. I made him marry Jolene. I made him have that church wedding. And that church wedding, that marriage lasted 3 weeks. And then he moved in with Cindy. And do you know, he's still married to her. That was 16, 17 years ago. They've got 3 boys. I love her a lot more than I do him. I can't believe how that turned out. It was perfect. And he knew all along. And my oldest girl didn't marry that Greek that made that baby, but she married just the right kid. And she's 36 now. She's got 5 little Catholics. God, I feel sorry for them. But she's happily married, doing great. My youngest girl, who is 5-plus years clean and sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, is married to a white guy. He's a Texan. And he totally loves and accepts Reggie, my black grandson. Now, I need to tell you what's happened. These kids have grown up. 5 of my grandkids are bigger than I am. That ain't saying a lot, but it is when you're talking grandkids. And that black one never has known he was black and I was white. That's one thing I've done wrong. I mean, done right. I've got 11 grandkids now, and he's as much loved and a part of me as they are. And we got a brand new granddaughter the other day that Donella has tried to kidnap from my daughter because she likes her. And I'm just so proud of my kids. Sherry's one of the guns at Morris Air, the little one, the baby. Now Morris Air is closing and Southwest is going to hire. My son runs a Harmon store in St. George. He's the gun. My other girl, B's a Catholic. I got to tell you what happened to that wife. I got sober and divorced her. She wouldn't go to Al-Anon, and I'd come to AA meetings, and she'd make me feel guilty. She'd go to meetings if they were in Hawaii or Seattle or Phoenix, but not at the Alano Club. And I divorced her, and it made me really unpopular for a couple of years with those kids. Well, with everybody. But I had met one of you, and I knew if I marry her, I was still in and out there. If I marry her, she'll understand if I got to get drunk. She won't get mad. She'll know it's my disease. And you know what? She didn't understand. She didn't accept it. And one day she said, we got to end this marriage because my sobriety is more important than you are. Lasted a year and a half. She's got 17, 18 years sobriety now. So she made a good decision. And then years later, I wound up alone in an apartment up on the east side. Party time, you know, I was going to do all that stuff I couldn't do married, go to Widow McCoy's and the Sojourner, and I'm running them with all these rich single women and who give me whiskey. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, and I about died. Drank my business into the ground and all that, and I wound up at the university. I went up there for treatment. One morning I got out of bed and showered before I got a drink and went up there, and they put me in an alcohol and drug ward. Now, I know how AA is now, but in them days, we didn't hang out with drug addicts. Okay, we were pure. And I'd never even met a drug addict in AA. And I talked to Father Mearsman. He was a friend of mine, and I said, they're putting me over there in the drug ward. And he said, just go, and we'll get a bed in the alcohol ward and move you over. Well, he was lying. Priests lie. And they left me in there. And I know now it was just the right place to be. But I was up to solid stools and getting to go to the cafeteria and feed myself and stuff. You know, I'd been there a couple of weeks. And in the VA hospital in Salt Lake, they have these tunnels underground. And that's how you get from one building to another. I guess it's so drunks don't get lost. You can't get lost. Go from this end of that tunnel over there, you know. And there'll be the cafeteria, or follow that tunnel and you'll be at X-ray. But I saw Kathy Ott, she's a friend of mine, member of AA, and this other cute little thing, and they had Brent D. in a wheelchair in this tunnel, and I said, what the hell are you doing? And they were smuggling Brent out to an AA meeting. And now, women had caused most of my problems, right? You can tell that by this story. But all I could think about when I walked away was, I wonder who that girl was with Kathy, you know. And they started letting me out on passes to go to meetings, and I ran into this girl. And it was Donella. And at the time, she was a drug addict. She has since become a drug addict, alcoholic, drug addict, and now alcoholic. There's a transformation that takes place if you keep coming. And I liked that girl. And the only problem was I found out that she was in the depths of her disease. She'd rather steal a bottle of Demerol and put it in her body than anything. And I got out of treatment and started drinking again off and on. And her and I got together. Now, if you want to talk about sick, you got a practicing alcoholic and a practicing drug addict trying to coexist and get a romance going. Jesus. And everybody that knew me said, stay away from her. She's poison. And everybody that knew her told me, stay away from her. She's poison. You know? No one blessed our union. We had a disastrous life for a long time. God, one time I came home, I used to do drug searches. You know how our wives used to do alcohol bottle searches? I'd do drug searches. And one time I was going through her closet and one of her cowboy boots fell over and this Demerol and syringes rolled out. And I took it, dumped it on the kitchen table, and it was this huge pile. And she was at work, and when she came home, I said, look at this. She said, where'd you get that? And I said, you know where I got it. She said, I've never seen it before. Goddamn liar. I've never lied about hiding whiskey. And she was addicted to treatment centers then. Every time the water got deep, she'd go to a treatment center, you know, and I'd be down there being wonderful and going to work and shit. And it was a nightmare. Donna Marilyn Huff raised her, brought her to Utah, and I can't tell you how many times I resented them. But one day we made a commitment to each other and to God and to you, because you guys stuck with us, to stop that shit. And we stopped it. I guess God just knew we were ready. We have the same sobriety date. And I don't do birthdays because chances are I'll get a bottle of whiskey to celebrate an eight-year birthday. I'm stupid. But she celebrates birthdays, so I always know how long I've been sober by her birthday. And that works in our house. You know, I don't need to take a birthday cake, and she needs to take one, and that works. We've learned compromise. Something else I did, and I know this is sacrilegious to say in an AA meeting. The AA meetings I was going to mainly were concerned with how to not drink today. And I didn't know how to live sober. Wait, I got to tell you what she did. And they said, no, tell us what you did. And everything I try to do, I try to tell them about my hard life at work. And they'd say, well, none of those people are here. What did you do? And I try to tell them about my AA sponsor. And they'd say, well, he ain't here. What did you do? And them damn Al-Anons just kept holding that mirror up to me. And we don't do that in AA. Some meetings we do, but most AA meetings we just whine and snivel and listen to each other, you know. And them Al-Anons made me look in the mirror. And the first time in my life I found out who the cause of my problems was. I'm the problem. God, it burned me that it had to be Al-Anons that taught me that. And I'm also the solution, and they taught me that. And that's when Donella and I started getting along, when I started getting along with my kids, and when I started getting along with you, was because I didn't need to be in an Al-Anon meeting. Every time I wanted to do your inventory, that would flash. Get a mirror out. What'd you do, Leo? And God, I'm so good to her. I mean, I can't even believe it. If my ex-wives knew how good I treat her, they'd kill to marry me again. And they both got resentments 10 miles long of me, but they don't know. It was just God. We go to a lot of AA meetings. She goes to hers and I go to mine, and we have the same home group, but we let each other be. And then I'm going to tell you how I got sober. We started hanging out with a bunch of winners. A bunch of winners. It don't do you no good to look in that mirror if you don't like what you see, and you got a drink to do. I hang out with winners, and they're not all in my home group. They're all over the place. To me, a winner is someone who practices principles in all our affairs. Anybody can look pretty in an AA meeting. God, we can come in here and sound pretty and look pretty and impress the hell out of each other. And then go out the door and be the biggest asshole in Utah, you know, and say, well, I'm sober alcoholic, you know. And I don't do that because the people I started running with don't do that. And I'll tell you how my home life is. This is a neat story. You women will hate it till you understand it. When I wake up in the morning, the way I'm awakened every morning is my wife says very gently, Leo, it's time to get up. I go in the kitchen, or in the where my TV is, and my coffee is poured. And my newspaper is open to the sports section. Doesn't that piss you women off? I mean, women libbers. I mean, they could go a long ways with that. You want to know how smart she is? I spend the whole rest of the day trying to get even. It's a five-minute act of kindness that I got to spend the next 24 hours trying to even up. That's a smart woman. I don't know where she learned that. That's how we live our life. And if I stand up to you and say, I'm a spiritual man. You know how I know I'm spiritual? You know why I know I'm right for this meeting? Because our 12 steps says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I work these steps on a daily basis. I am sober today. If I didn't work these steps on a daily basis, I wouldn't be sober today. And I wouldn't be spiritual today. If I wake up and go to bed the same day sober, I've been spiritual all day. And you know, I know my language. Man, you guys, it's hard to follow you. When they can go through a whole damn meeting without not saying damn or shit or something, I think, God, I'm the spiritual speaker. How am I supposed to do that? But, you know, I know I haven't said the F word yet. For me, that's progress. Major progress. And it's important to me. My home group, most of us smoke. Gordy will love this. He's an anti-smoke. Stay away from Gordy if you smoke. But he's one of them radical guys, you know. He probably carries signs for it's over, no smoking. But most of us in my home group smoke, but a few of them didn't like it. It bothered them. They had asthma or they just didn't like it or whatever, and they were going to quit coming to our home group. We voted non-smoking. And we got a majority of the smoke. I think it was unanimous, wasn't it? Just because we're sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous and other people's feelings are important to us. You know, if that would have been me when I come to, screw you, I didn't come here to stop smoking. You know, that's just what I'd have said, and I'd have voted the other way. Of course, you'd have voted me down. I would have resented you, but I got into service. All these guys got into service. Don Huff's one of my heroes. Now that I'm not mad about Donella anymore. And Don's been in service since the day I met him. And he's a gentle, quiet man, just the opposite of me. And I started watching Don and thinking I'd like to be more like him. And he always will just say to you, you'll say, why do you sponsor all these idiots? He gets more retards. When the rest of us don't want to sponsor somebody, we send them to Don. And he sponsors them. And in his service work, he's just quiet and gentle. And he had a lot about him I wanted. And I started following Don. And he said, you're going to have to get your... I used to sit in the back of the room at these assemblies and do your inventory. That's easy. It's fun. He said, no, you got to get your name on the list. And then I started hanging with Ernie and Pat and all these guys that are all in service. And what they call it is giving back to AA. You know, it's pretty easy to come in here and take everything Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer us. It's hard to pay it back. You know, the way we can pay it back. You know, what went on this weekend is not going to change AA one way or the other. But it is in Utah. And if we didn't meet this weekend, who would? What would happen to AA in Utah? You know. And I know that Ogden, St. George, anywhere is just like Salt Lake. You walk in there and start talking service, and man, they don't want to hear it. They want to hear your drunkalogue for the 1,000th time, but they don't want to hear your service commitment. And these guys taught me it don't matter what they think or do or anything. And the reason I would listen to these guys, they all came into AA after me, and they were all sober. They had longer sobriety than I did. And I knew none of them were near as smart as me. Not near as well-liked as me. Not near as good a speaker as me. And the assholes were all celebrating birthdays, and I couldn't. So I started doing what they said, and I stayed sober. And some people at... God, when I first met Gay, I did not like that man, and I've made it a point over the years to try to keep not liking him. And I never knew why, and I know now why, because he reminds me so damn much of me. When I think I'm right, I'm going to, by God, beat it into the ground till you think I'm right. But now that I've got to know him, I know that if you can show him, no, you're not right, Gay, he'll go the other way. I just didn't know that about him. Tom, that guy that we elected delegate yesterday. Only in AA do you get a third of the vote and win. I don't know. I don't understand that, and I don't have to, but I accept it. But we elected Tom. He is so arrogant and into himself, I can't hardly stand it. you know. But you know what? I've had to sit in some meetings with him the last couple of years because of our service jobs. Tom's a kind, gentle man who loves AA, who loves service. And, you know, God's in charge. He'll do just the right thing. The only reason I didn't lose yesterday after I watched the people who did lose is because I didn't stand up for nothing, you know. I mean, my friends fell by the wayside in a hurry. And they were all being in shock last night. And I just think it's God saying, you guys have worked damn hard. You guys have worked damn hard. Let some of these other young bucks take over. And you go to a meeting and be a bleeding deacon or a guru, you know, and you've earned it. And I hope I can get that in their head. That's my intention. Of course, this woman I'm married to screwed that up. Standing up and being named treatment center coordinator, you know, I never expected that. So I do have to keep going to those meetings. But I get to sit in the back and act important, you know. I don't have to. Oh, I'll look intelligent. They'll say, that's Leo. He used to be the chairman. You know, I know. I don't know. I don't like meetings to go over. I'm shocked that there are this many of you here. I know that you're not going to go walking away saying, God, did you hear what he said? I mean, that's just burned into my brain. I'll be a new person now because of what Leo said. Yeah. But I am grateful that you're here. I am, you know, I owe my life to you guys. You got me sober. You tolerated me. Norma came up here this morning from Salt Lake and a friend of ours that's been in and out of the program like I was is drunk again. And it's really upsetting her. And all I could think of to say to her was, you can't quit on him, and we can't quit on him. They didn't quit on us when we got here. Damn few of us come in the door and make it the first time, right? And if they could kick you out of AA, I guarantee you, I'd have been out a long time ago. And I have to live by the third and the fifth tradition, you know. The only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. The fifth tradition tells us what our job is. We've stopped drinking. Now we got to give it away. Carry our message to the alcoholic who still suffers. The biggest thing that's happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous happened yesterday. And I hope you'll understand this. Because it told you where my ego is now, where my spirituality is, and where my sobriety is. I was eligible, finally, to stand for delegate. I was eligible. I didn't stand. That says a lot about Leo. Because when I was early into AA and they were all hovering around Ike Bowers and loving him and treating him like God, I knew I had to be the delegate someday. And now I know I don't ever have to be the delegate. You know, and that for me, that's success. Success is being qualified, but not needing to do it. And you know, one of these days I'll go back and be a central office rep or a GSR or something. That's, they need them jobs filled. They're the important jobs. But success for me was yesterday, and I owe that success to you. I'm grateful to the committee. I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, our visitors who came so far and did a magnificent job yesterday. And I need to rub elbows with people like that once in a while because I get them up on a pedestal. And those two don't belong on a pedestal. I told her this morning, I think she's a funny broad, you know, and that's just how I feel about her. She did a great, and you know, Don and some of these guys that knew Julian said, you're gonna love this guy, and I do. He's got a gentle, clean, kind intelligence about him, and he's the kind of person I want to be more like. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for my sobriety, and God bless you.